Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
When I was about 11, maybe 12, I did something that I have now come to regret.
Oh, wow. What happened?
Well, I used to pop my sister's bra strap.
Wesley Robert Morris. No, you did not.
I did. My sister and I were very close. We are very close. Her name is Robin. She's 2 years younger than I am. So it means that at some point, her body started to develop and change. And she had a training bra. We would go outside and play. And knowing at some point that I wanted to do something that would make everybody in the group laugh, I would pull the strap of her bra as far back as I could get it, like a catapult.
Oh, my God.
And I'd let it go. And it would make an actual snap. I distinctly remember the snap.
Oh, my God. Where did you get that idea from?
I don't think I saw anybody do it. But I definitely know that the atmosphere of doing things to girls that other people would find funny, I probably got from this movie called Zapped. And the plot of Zapped is basically...
What the hell's going on here?
Scott Baio is endowed with telekinesis and uses his telekinetic powers to pop open girls' shirts and lift their skirts.
I honestly can't even believe that was a movie. I mean, I can believe it, but I'm horrified. Like, that's awful.
Yeah, I know. Welcome to 1983, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Lord.
Eight.
Okay, go on.
But I don't remember exactly what I was thinking when I did it, except I loved that everybody else found it funny. What never registered to me was how upset my sister was. She would scream at me and tell me that it's not funny. She'd run into the house and tell my mother.
Oh, my God.
My mother would then say, Wesley, you can't do this.
Oh, my gosh.
Stop it. But I kept doing it.
Did you ever actually apologize to Robin?
I did apologize, but I apologized like a very sort of perfunctory, I'm sorry. I mean, I knew I was apologizing for popping her bra strap.
But the deeper meaning of the apology maybe hadn't sunken in yet.
No, it didn't sink in till 4 months ago.
What is the strongest memory you have? Strongest memory of the incident, something that you cannot forget. Take whatever time you need.
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense.
Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation fiasco. Watching that hearing, it just made me want to apologize to my sister again.
Oof. So what was the grown adult version of that apology like for you?
It wasn't about absolution, which I think as a kid, you want to be acknowledged for having done the right thing and apologizing. It was about acknowledging that I'd done this horrible thing. It was about outlining my perception of the depth of the injury and giving that back to her to do whatever she wanted to do with.
Well, what did she do with your apology?
It gave her a kind of lightness, but it doesn't even make the fact that I did it better to her. I think it just makes it real.
I'm Jenna Wortham.
And I'm Wesley Morris. We're two culture writers at the New York Times.
And this is Still Processing. I have a story like that too, unfortunately. But the key difference between you and me is that I did not apologize.
So what happened?
So I have this childhood friend named Nikki. Mm-hmm. We grew up together. Both of our parents were in the PTA. For a while, we had the same babysitter. And very quickly, we became best friends. We went to the same elementary school, and then we actually lived in different school districts, so we were separate for middle school and high school. And then towards the end of high school, we realized that we'd gotten into the same college, and we decided to be roommates. And college was a really tough transition for me for many reasons. And it was really nice to have somebody that felt like family around, and I just remember really fun times, like late night talks in our dorm beds, like sharing clothes, like real sistership. Mm-hmm. So at some point, Nikki goes home for the holidays and she comes back with a box full of memorabilia from our childhood. And she pulls out this journal that she kept as a kid. And inside there's a drawing of one kid pushing the other on the playground. And I was the one doing the pushing. So we're looking at this picture, and we're both laughing about it. But she turns to me and says, like, you were really mean to me when we were kids.
You were a bully.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to say it, but I was. You know, as an adult now looking back, I understand why. Nikki was, you know, she was like the golden child of our school. She was in all the gifted and talented programs. She was always picked to do the readings in front of the school. She was really beautiful, really feminine. She just had all this gorgeous natural curly hair. She was lean. She was leggy. She was popular.
She was Beyonce?
She was baby Beyonce. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It all makes sense. And I was chubby, and I was androgynous. I think I was also like a really unhappy little kid. I think I was being bullied by my older sister and I didn't really know what to do with it. But I was just acting out this trauma and this unrest. And I always felt like I could. Mm. I could get away with it. Mm. And I have to admit, Wesley, like, I feel really ashamed of that behavior. And I feel really embarrassed and mortified that I never actually dealt with it.
Well, if anything, not apologizing makes you fundamentally American, I would say.
It's horrible.
Well, no, it's true. We live in this country in yeah. which there's no apology for the land that was taken from indigenous peoples. I mean, think about it. Some people from one country come to some other country. They kill everybody who was already here.
Yeah.
They put them on other land, make them live there. Mm. And this lore that gets passed down through the centuries
right.
that this massacre, this genocide, is a thing to break bread over.
Right, which we do every year without any acknowledgement of where our abundances and our blessings actually come from.
It's the sorry, not sorriest holiday in the history of the world, I'm going to bet.
It's tough.
We have no reparations for Black people whose enslaved ancestors helped build this country on the land that they took from the indigenous people.
Yeah.
Also, Jenna, your failure to apologize actually puts you in very good company. There is an entire section of the American popular music canon devoted to not apologizing.
There's at least enough for a really good sorry, not sorry playlist, but let's start at the beginning. What you got? Well, I won't
back down. What's called the top of my head? I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty.
Yes. You can stand me up at the gates
of hell, but I won't back down. One of the great American I'm Not Sorry songs. It makes me proud to be an American just to sing it. I'm sorry, Miss
Jackson. Also, Outkast, Miss Jackson. Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times. Me and your daughter got special things going on. I mean, great song, love it. But Miss Jackson didn't do anything. You didn't do anything to Miss Jackson. Like, talk to her daughter. Like, maybe you should, I'm sorry, young Jackson. Like, yeah. You need to deal with the problem and stop avoiding it. What else should I
be? Nirvana's All Apologies.
Mm-hmm. What else could I say?
which is a song that really is about not saying sorry for saying something that's true.
Right.
Beyoncé.
Oh my gosh, the anthem.
That's an anthem. These aren't just songs on like song 11 on some album you've never heard of before.
Oh, they're major hits. Truth be told, Wesley, it's not just in music, even though music is the soundtrack for our non-apologetic culture. It's everywhere in popular culture. I mean, it feels like every single day you turn on the news or turn on Twitter, or turn on Instagram. Do you love how I talk about social media? Is that it's like a television set? But you put on, you know, anytime you read anything, there's essentially someone who did something and isn't sorry for it, doesn't want to apologize for it, doesn't want to deal with it.
Or they think they're apologizing, but they really are not. Hey, Kevin Hart, we're talking about you.
Correct.
Kevin Hart is announced as the host of next month's Academy Awards. He is very excited to do it. Everybody's kind of like, oh, this is interesting. Kevin Hart's going to host. This should be a change of pace. He seems to really want to do it, unlike some of the other hosts. Although I think Jimmy Kimmel actually did want that job and was good at it. But anyway, that excitement lasted for what? 30 seconds?
If even. Milliseconds.
A day.
And then Twitter said, oh, no, he didn't. We've got all the receipts. I'm making the hand gesture of just spraying
so
out cash.
Many.
All the receipts from Mr. Hart's past of making homophobic after homophobic joke and using the F word, the other F word, and just really being trash online. And he had to step down.
Well, he opted to step down is what he did.
He chose had to.
I don't know if we agree or disagree about this, but I don't think he had to turn the job down. I think what he had to do was give a good apology.
Well, he clearly didn't want to. The thing is, Kevin Hart thinks that what he did was give an apology, but he actually just threw up a bunch of defense mechanisms and essentially was just like, I'm sorry that you're mad. You know, he didn't really address the impact of his actions. He didn't really acknowledge any harm that he might have caused. And he didn't even try to empathize or have compassion with the people who were upset. He basically said, this is a you problem, not a me problem. I'm moving on with my life.
I mean, can you imagine how many movies, how much culture would be different if people had just apologized from the giddy up? Take Poltergeist, for example.
Oh, my God. Okay, let's go.
The story of a nice white family who moves into a suburban subdivision.
There's one more thing. A terrible presence is in there with her. So much rage. So much betrayal. I've never sensed anything like it. I don't know what hovers over this house. But it was strong enough to punch a hole into this world and take your daughter away from you.
Only to discover that the reason there's all this craziness is because they built this place on ancient burial grounds. And nobody atoned for it.
Right.
Oh, here's another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Would there be a best man?
Oh, my God.
So Lance figured it out, didn't he?
Yeah. He figured it out. Promptly beat my ass and, called off the wedding.
So Best Man, which is a movie about a writer who writes a really scandalous tell-all fiction, I'm using air quotes here, about his friend group from college. They've all regathered for a wedding and everyone's got copies of the book and they're slowly realizing that he's used their lives to make all this money and revealed some really deep and personal secrets.
See, they would be in marital bliss by the time the book was supposed to have come out. But thanks to you, Miss, I want an exclusive. I got my ass whooped.
If Taye Diggs had just said, you know what, you guys.
All he had to do, all Harper had to do, was say, I got y'all some TGIF gift cards so y'all can go out at your leisure, take yourself to dinner, get an extra entree or two if you want for the kids, bring some home, get some Henny. They have good margaritas. All you need to do is, no, I didn't mean to cause you harm. But no, personally, I'm glad he didn't apologize because then he wouldn't have such a delightful franchise. But if he had, everything would have been fine. that is what leads to a culture of non-apology, is the inability to actually address a weakness, mm-hmm. right? And admit mm-hmm. a weakness and be vulnerable. And look, as a culture, I don't think that we have the tools to metabolize shame. Trauma that is not dealt with, that's not transformed into something else, guess what? It doesn't disappear. It goes somewhere else, usually into another person, a child, a family member, a partner. God. You know, it's like matter. You just can't get rid of it. It has to go somewhere else.
It's like poltergeist.
It's like a poltergeist, exactly. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Azra bag collection and its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Azra is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and your 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Azra collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Well, Janet, your wisdom has just reminded me of something. In terms of what makes for a good apology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about the incident in which the television writer and showrunner Dan Harmon was accused of sexually harassing one of his fellow writers, one of his employees, Megan Gans.
Yeah, so here's what happened, for those who missed it. In early 2018, Megan Gans, who was a writer on the show Community, calls out her former boss, Dan Harmon, for workplace misconduct, harassing her. But she's not specific. She just kind of alludes to it. Dan apparently reaches out directly and apologizes, but then goes a step further and addresses it on his podcast because, as he says, he doesn't want to perpetuate the problem, and he also wants people to learn from his mistakes.
And she said the same thing she'd been saying the entire time. Please, don't you understand that focusing on me like this, liking me like this, preferring me like this, I can't say no to it. And when you do it, it makes me unable to know whether I'm good at my job. And because I finally got to the point where I said to her, you know, I love you, because that's what I thought it was. When you target somebody for 2 years, and it was therefore rejected that way, I was humiliated. So I wanted to teach her a lesson. I wanted to show her that if she didn't like being liked in that way, then, oh boy, she should get over herself. After all, if you're just going to be a writer, then this is how just writers get treated. I crushed on her and resented her for not reciprocating it. And the entire time, I was the one writing her paychecks and in control of whether she stayed or went. And just treated her cruelly, pointedly. Things that I would never, ever, ever have done if she had been male.
What he does is offer a very unvarnished window into why he felt entitled to pursue her, and what he realized was the impact. His sort of unrelenting advances on her, which she turned down repeatedly, put her in a position of low self-esteem, low self-confidence, and frankly, you know, job peril, right? Yep. Because she's in a position where turning down her boss means she might lose her job and never work again in this industry, which, as we know, happens to women in these industries.
Yep.
So after the podcast comes out, Megan Gans tweets, "Here's a weird one for you. Last week, I called out my former boss, Dan Harmon, for sexual harassment, and today I'm going to ask you to listen to his podcast." She continues, "Yes, I only listened because I expected an apology. But what I didn't expect was the relief I'd feel just hearing him say these things actually happened. I didn't dream it. I'm not crazy. Ironic that the only person who could give me that comfort is the one person I'd never ask." She also adds, "This was never about vengeance. It's about vindication. That's why it didn't feel right to just accept his apology in private, although I did that too. Because if any part of this process should be done in the light, it's the forgiveness part. And so, Dan Harmon, I forgive you." And what I think is really remarkable in this whole exchange and why it really stands out as an example of a good apology is because the people who maybe idolize Dan Harmon or liken themselves to him or find themselves in a similar position of power or a similar position of privilege can understand that that line of thinking is so toxic and very damaging and can hopefully understand how not to do what he did in the first place.
I also think that it's good to talk about that Dan Harmon apology because there's a version of it, and we've seen so many of them, in which Dan Harmon just says, "I'm sorry you felt that way." Or like, "I did do that, but it wasn't the way you think it was."
The Dan Harmon apology is devoid of defensiveness. It's devoid of blame. It's devoid of deflection. It's not an attempt to avoid the impact of the act.
Right.
It's a direct dealing with it.
Which brings us back to Kevin Hart. Now, Jenna, I have seen three versions of this apology now. And I'd like to stop for a second and think about why none of them works and why all of them, all of the subsequent non-apologies deserve an apology. So here's what he posted on Instagram.
And it's important to note that the video is Kevin Hart laying in bed, shirtless, voice all gravelly. He hasn't had his first green juice of the day. Just bejeweled.
They're like
necklaces.
Little pearls.
Like, just like, I mean, he couldn't even be bothered to put a shirt on to talk about this incident.
All right, so this is from the Instagram post.
"I swear, man, our world is becoming beyond crazy. I'm not going to let the craziness frustrate me or anger me, especially when I worked hard to get to the mental space that I am at now. My team calls me, 'Oh my God, Kevin, the world is upset about tweets you did years ago. Oh my God. Guys, I'm almost 40 years old. If you don't believe that people change, grow, evolve as they get older, I don't know what to tell you. If you want to hold people in a position where they always have to justify or explain their past, then do you. I'm the wrong guy, man. I'm in a great place, a great mature place, where all I do is spread positivity. If you're not doing that, you're not on my page."
That is a textbook non-apology. It's actually a schoolyard taunt. "I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you." I mean, there is just no willingness whatsoever to absorb any critique or any feedback from anyone. And just he's flipping it back on anyone that has a problem with him.
What Kevin Hart is doing is defensive. He's not hearing the complaint about his behavior. He's not hearing the hurt.
Right. He does not manage to find empathy or compassion for the communities that are impacted by his glibness around sexuality.
Yes. That is the most nauseating quality of a bad apology. I mean, in terms of glibness, it's a thing that never penetrates. It's a non-serious gesture. Jenna, we should just say that he did get around at some point to making an actual apology to gay people the community. And what he said was, "I've made the choice to step down from hosting this year's Oscars. This is because I do not want to be a distraction on a night that should be celebrated by so many amazing, talented artists. I sincerely apologize to the LGBTQ community for my insensitive words from my past.
Eye roll. So, if you could hear an eye roll, you would have just heard that.
Oh, my God. It's the rock rumbling toward Indiana Jones and, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. So what is wrong with this part? Because this part, to me, is gets to the fundamental question of what a good apology is. You have to at least restate what you did. He kind, or like, you like, or
no,
reinsert who
no,
you wronged.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to stop you right there. He says, from my insensitive words from my past.
Yes, that's true.
And he also didn't quite even get the updated version of the acronyms. There's now a Q, A, and I, and a plus, sir. So you should have just tried a little bit harder.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you could have made a donation to an organization. You know, you could have volunteered some time. There are a lot of ways to show genuine remorse, and enough words to max out a tweet ain't always it.
Mm. And then last week, Ellen DeGeneres basically had him on her show.
Right.
It's 10 years old. I've addressed it. I've apologized for it. I don't want to have this conversation anymore because I know who I am. I'm not that guy.
I know you're not that guy, because I know you.
Mm-hmm.
I really want you to host the Oscars. I called the Academy today. I said, Kevin's on. I have no idea if he wants to come back and host, but what are your thoughts? And they were like, oh, my God, we want him to host. Whatever we can do, we would be thrilled. And he should host the Oscars.
And she basically exonerated him.
But the thing is that Ellen is essentially seeing herself as a peacekeeper, as a gatekeeper. She is deciding to be this liaison to help heal the relationship between the Academy and Kevin Hart.
A former Oscar host herself, yes.
Right. And look, she's deciding to spend all of her gay capital coins on Mr. Kevin Hart by insisting that she believes that he's apologized. I just feel like if he's already apologized once, what's the harm in doing it again? And the worst thing about this entire dynamic is Kevin Hart keeps insisting over and over and over again throughout the entire appearance, he's already said sorry. But if you've already said sorry, Mr. Hart, like, where are the damn receipts, you know? Like, you keep saying, the people that found the tweets find the apology. No, you
That's
should be
not-
playing the apology. Ellen should say, roll the clip, and your apology should come up.
Yes. But that wasn't enough. He then had to go on his own Sirius XM show, Straight from the Heart, and apologize, but in the third person. He did not say, I apologize. He said, Kevin Hart apologizes. And then a couple days after that, he goes on Good Morning America and tells Michael Strahan and the millions of people who are watching that morning that he's literally over it. But I would say he's literally under it. But whatever. Let's just take a step back away from Kevin Hart to just walk us through a little bit of a history of how we got to the word apology.
Oh, all right, Professor Morris.
Because
I think... Is that why you're in a suit and tie today?
Did that for you.
Thank you.
And the people who can't see me. In Plato and Socrates' days, an apology wasn't what we think of an apology as being now. An apology actually is the Tom Petty version. An apology was the Beyoncé version. It's Demi Lovato's Sorry Not Sorry. So at some point, Socrates is dragged before the court to apologize for corrupting the youth of Athens.
Mm.
And he basically has to give an apologia. And his apologia basically amounts to a self-defense. It is almost like, you want me to be sorry, but I'm not sorry. And here's a case I'm going to present to you as to why.
Mm.
For anyone who wants to read about this, I highly recommend Plato's The Apology of Socrates. Fine reading, very enlightening. But that is originally the way an apology functioned.
Hmm.
You presented yourself before court, made a case, often mockingly, by the way, of the people accusing you of having done something wrong.
Wow.
By offering an apologia.
Fascinating.
That has evolved to basically mean exactly the opposite. It means you are sorry for a thing that you did.
So, Wesley, I have an idea.
Okay.
Now that we know what a bad apology looks like, why don't we run through the elements of a good apology? For anyone listening who wants a little help, has something they need to make amends for, we've got a template for you.
It is 2019.
New year, new you.
Yes. Get your apology game right. I mean, I know I could use some help with mine.
Same. Okay. I would say use I statements. I messed up. I'm sorry. It's all about taking responsibility, accepting the ownership of what you did wrong, and not putting it back on the other person.
I would also say as a corollary to that, no you statements. This is the apologizer saying what they did wrong.
Correct. If you use too many you statements, you run into the problem of flipping the blame around on the other person.
Yes. Just don't. You made me. You felt.
You. Just let it go.
Yes.
No ego. Pay the coat check, the $2. Just leave your ego at the door and really come in super vulnerable, super soft, super tender. This isn't about making yourself look good.
Yes. I would say no defense or explanation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know that you were bullied, so you're bullying me because you got bullied too. You already bullied me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk about that after I get my apology.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to probably mean restating the offense and saying, I did this to you. I acknowledge that I did it. And this is what I've learned in being able to get to a point to give this apology.
Correct.
You.
Correct. And also know your intentions going into the apology.
That's a good one.
If you're doing it because you want this other person to respond in a particular way, let it go. It's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
This is about them. This is about atoning for something that you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot expect anything from the person that you're making this apology to. All you can do is essentially lay yourself out at their feet, admit the wrongdoing, and say, I hear you, and I get it. And if I could do it again, I wouldn't do it.
Acknowledge that what you did was wrong. Acknowledge that you hurt the person. And don't expect anything in return.
Ding, ding, ding. That is the key.
It's an utterly selfless act.
It has to be.
It has to be. And the thing about the Kevin Hart apology is that it's totally selfish.
Exactly.
Like, who is hearing that and thinking, oh, you know what? I forgive you.
Read his comments. Tons of people. Which just gives you more insight into the conundrum we're in. And why this is exactly who we are as a country.
Well, we're going to take a break. But before we do, there's a very, very easy, simple, good song that pretty much sums up how to give an apology, covered by many people. Nobody's version is more iconic than Brenda Lee's.
Yes.
This is her just simply saying, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, so sorry. Please accept my apology, but love was blind, and I was too blind to see.
Sorry. This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Hello?
Hi, Nikki. Hey, girl. Hey.
Hey. How you doing? Oh my gosh, it's been forever.
Well, thanks for being down for this call. I did actually want to talk about something really specific from our childhood that I've been meditating on.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, what do you remember about us as kids?
I remember really enjoying your company and your conversation, and I felt like I identified with you a lot, but I kind of felt like an outsider at the same time.
Mm.
I felt like you were a popular person, and I was kind of like a nerd. Like, I didn't know all the cool things, and I wasn't like, I just didn't feel like I was part of the in crowd.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. See, I remember you as the pretty popular girl.
That's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Everybody loved you.
Wow.
So I have this really specific memory that I want to run by you.
Okay.
So our first year in college, we lived together.
Hated every second of it. No.
I loved it. No, I loved it. I felt like because we went to different high schools and we fell out of touch during our most formative years, I felt like it was so nice to get to know you as an adult and to, I don't know. I have such good memories of that time.
Yes.
I have this really clear memory of one weekend. You'd gone home. It might have been for the holidays. I'm not sure. But you'd gone home for the weekend and you brought back some box of memorabilia. In that box, there was a journal or like a notebook of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you were flipping through it and you were like, look at this picture. And it was a drawing. And remember in Cameron, the playground had those tunnels you could climb on top of, like those huge sculptural tunnels you could sit on top of or like climb through on the playground. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So the picture you showed me was a little girl sitting on top of the tunnel with a smile on her face, like a big grin, and she had a curly afro. And then there was another child with, like, pigtails flying off the tunnel. So the picture was depicting me on the tunnel with my curly afro, having just shoved you off the tunnel with your braids. Do you remember this at all?
I don't remember this picture, but I probably have. I know what diary you're talking about. And I think I have it somewhere downstairs in my storage, but I don't know about the picture itself.
Oh, okay. Well, it was just a drawing, and you were like, you were kind of really mean to me when we were kids.
Maybe that picture. Do you remember how I told you I always felt like an outsider?
Uh-huh.
You're pushing me off the tunnel, so I must not feel like I have a place or feel like, you know, maybe I just felt like, I don't know, some sort of negative energy or something. I'm not sure.
But I think that did happen, though. Like, I don't think that was a depiction. And I mean, maybe it didn't happen exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do recall picking on you. I really recall being mean to you.
That's so strange because I had the feeling, but I don't remember specific instances. So maybe I didn't want to believe that you were being mean to me. And I can disassociate pretty easily, so maybe even if it did happen, like, you know, any sort of bullying or anything like that, me being like, no, she didn't really mean, I don't know.
Nikki, I want to take responsibility for what happened in our past. And being a little kid doesn't matter. The point is, I harmed you. I'm really sorry I did those things to you. Oh, Nikki.
Okay. I didn't even really know that was there, so. Wow. Okay. I think I love you. And I guess I was willing to just suppress I just remember a feeling. I don't remember specific things. So to actually have you say that things did happen between us, it just brings everything together. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, I mean, we're both going through our own stuff as kids, too.
We had tough childhoods, but that doesn't make it okay, you know? Are you okay? I didn't want to cause more harm.
As far as, like, digging deeper, I'm not afraid of that. So I appreciate it, actually, because just digging through your childhood, you can kind of see how the story is painted or how you become who you are, you know?
Do you want to keep talking about it? Maybe I can text you and we can set up a phone date to do part two offline.
Sure. I would love to.
Yeah, I miss you so much.
Yeah, I miss you too. You know, I heard you loud and clear, and thank you so much for taking the time and wanted to talk through this.
Love you, Boo.
Love you.
Still Processing is a product of the New York Times.
It's produced by Nina Patak.
Our editors are Sasha Weiss, Larissa Anderson, and Wendy Doerr.
We get editorial oversight from Lisa Tobin and Samantha Hennig.
Our engineer is Jake Gorski.
And our theme music is by Kindness. It's called World Restart from the album Otherness.
You can find all of our episodes and various things at nytimes.com/stillprocessing.
And if you don't mind, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it.
Till next week. Bye.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.